Welcome to What's the Difference, where we ask the tough questions about the practice of diversity and inclusion in our organizations. Why do we seem to keep spinning our wheels without seeing the progress we would like? Why are we so polarized about diversity? And what opportunities exist to have your company take advantage of what a truly diverse and inclusive company can do? Here is your host, Sarah Taylor.
So often we hear that one of the differences that makes a difference in the workplace is generations. And, you know, I would say, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, there was a lot of work done. Okay, yeah, let's understand these generations, and folks kind of get a good sense. And then along comes a new generation, Generation Z. They have entered our workplace, entered with full force, yet they are still not in full force. They are fully present in our workplace, yet still so much more of the generation to come. Today, we're going to spend time with two experts and that can tell us more about Generation Z. What can we expect from them in the workplace? How are they different? And part two, our next podcast will be, how does Generation Z see the work of diversity, equity, and inclusion? What do they need? What are their expectations of us as practitioners and as leaders of organizations? So excited for this conversation and so excited to bring in our experts here. First, we have Dr. Corey C. Miller. Both of these women, incredibly accomplished. So featured on NPR, New York Times, and all kinds of areas where folks are connecting with her TED Talk on Generation Z, and on and on and on. She has a master's degree in educational leadership and a PhD in higher education, and is currently a faculty member in the Department of Leadership Studies and Education and Organizations at Wright State University. Joining her is her co-author, Dr. Megan Grace. Also, so much more with both of these women that I'm cutting out of their bios. So do check our show notes, because there's so much that both of these women bring to this work. She also a generational researcher, author, speaker, consultant, and podcast host, and began her journey as a generational researcher in 2014. She also serves as a consultant with Plaid LLC, an organizational development firm, where she specializes in research and assessment, curriculum and program development, and strategic projects. Let me say, too, the other piece that is so unique about them is that they do their own research. They're not just relying on research from other folks. We're going to hear a bit about that research, too. So they do their own design and implementation on generations. And so very excited to hear about that. Dr. Corey C. Miller, Dr. Megan Grace, thank you for joining us today. Glad to have you here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
We have listeners that are practitioners themselves, and they may hear in you, wow, I want to be that person. I want to do that work someday. So just in general, we can look at your degrees, we can look at your experience, but in general, how did you get to this place where you're at today? Megan, can we start with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Sarah. It's great to be here. Again, my name is Megan Grace. I'm a generational researcher, author, consultant, lots of things. I call it kind of my happy accident of getting to where I got today. I started my work in higher education took a very traditional route doing a master's program. And that's where I was connected with Corey. We were working in the same department on a college campus. And really, we developed a shared interest in this topic. And along the way, Corey's been an incredible mentor, friend, collaborator, teammate. But really, the way that we have gone about getting to where we are is that we've never told ourselves no to our curiosity, that when we are interested in something, yeah, finding a way to find the answers and not being scared of asking big questions. And that's something that I ask or that I share with people that are often interested in taking similar route in research, whether it's generational research or just research in general, that like not being scared of a question and finding the answer really can take you far. And I always tell that to students that are trying to figure out what's their path in life. And I always say sometimes people don't ask big enough questions and have the tenacity to go after the answer. And so I always joke that I got into this on accident because I raised my hand in a staff meeting, and we're here seven, almost 8 years later, still talking about this topic and really investing a lot of time and energy into this topic. And my path has kind of weaved in and out of higher education, looking at it from working on a college campus, working for an educational nonprofit at one point, working back on a campus, and now I'm working in consulting, and I still serve a lot of higher ed clients, but doing a lot of organizational development work and seeing how Generation Z, as they're progressing through life, as students, as young people, and now moving into professional careers, the way that this very important demographic research is impacting a lot of different environments. And that is really, I mean, that's the very short version of how I got here. I said yes to
you
a
raised your hand.
Meeting that course. Yeah, I raised my hand. And that's always the thing of, sometimes you can't plan for the best things that happen to you in life and not being scared of the unknown. And I think that Corey and I have stayed, the thing that has guided us in a lot of the work that we do is that we're staying humble, and that we're staying humble to doing the work when it comes to doing research and allowing that be at the forefront of what we do and developing insights and developing information and not really getting ahead of ourselves and thinking, well, this research is going to lead to a book tour. Like ourselves get there.
Right.
And we're always just thinking about, okay, well, what is the importance of the information and the research that we're generating? And then we let it take its natural course, and it's never failed us. So that's my take on it. I would love to hear Corey's take on how we've got here today.
Love it, love it. And before we move to Corey, what generation do you identify with, Megan?
Well, I was born in 1990, so I'm very firmly planted in the millennial generation, and I'm like a walking, talking millennial stereotype. You either love it or you hate it.
That's great. Love it. Love it. Thanks, Megan. Corey, how did you make your way to this, where you're at today, and what generation do you identify with?
Well, first and foremost, thank you again for having us, and I am a very proud Gen Xer. I realize we're a very small generation trapped between what everybody else talks about, boomers and millennials, but we still are here. One of the things I love working, you know, with Megan on is the fact that we just have different generational perspectives ourselves. So it's been really fun to do a lot of these projects to say, hey, we're two different generations and we're looking at it even third generation. So that's been really neat. I really got into this based on my own observations that something just felt really different in my job. I was working at the university that Megan was talking about, and we just were having just some different types of student interactions. It was we were recruiting for a program on our campus, and the students were asking different questions, and it just felt different. So something just seemed like it was worth investigating. Is there a change in the student perspectives, outlooks, styles, preferences? And if there is, and there are new people coming in, do we need to change what we're doing to better serve them? And it was really, really kind of came from a place of, I want to do better by my students. If we are not speaking their language, if we're not working with them, then they're clearly not going to be a part of our program. They're clearly not going to want to even come to the institution. So that kind of led the unfolding of the dominoes early on. And that was in 2013. And yes, Megan raised her hand in a staff meeting and said, is anybody interested in looking into this with me? I don't even know what this is yet. And she said, yes, I do. And thus we began. And we had no idea that we would then, a year later, after this kind of initial conversation, then deploy our very first study. And that study, again, one of the things, like, as Megan said, a happy accident. We didn't know how to be a generational researcher. No one really trains you for that. I mean, you can get a degree in demography, but this is a really specific area, and we didn't have any background. And so when we did our first study, we actually did, we asked, you know, multiple choice questions, but we also asked open-ended questions, which apparently is not very common when you're looking at generational studies. Most people do polls and they get percentages. And we had all this, like, we had this, these words from these young people about their experiences. And all of a sudden, a lot of people became very interested in knowing what they were saying.
Oh, I love that. It's that qualitative. Yes.
Exactly. So that is why we sort of, we do quantitative research and we do descriptive research. We really pride ourselves on digging into the qualitative work. And so those voices of Gen Zers, we've always been an advocate and generational optimists and want to, mm-hmm. you know, basically capture what they're saying. And provide that and share that with others. So here we are, many studies, many books, many articles, many podcasts, many news stories later. And we are going probably stronger than we've ever gone before. We've got a research agenda a mile long from this point. So, you're going to be expecting to see many things from us moving forward.
I love that. Absolutely love it. And I'm such a fan of the making sure that qualitative data is included when you're talking about any kind of differences, because so much more complexity can come out in that. So I love hearing that. And I'm going to plug it for you. Your most recent book, Generation Z, A Century in the Making. I love that title, by the way. Your most recent book. So just putting a plug in for that, for folks to check out that book. I just want to take a moment of your time to mention a new tool you may find useful: how you communicate with your employees, external stakeholders, and the community at large is vital for ensuring that your employees feel safe, welcome, and seen. With that in mind, here's a checklist of do's and don'ts to help you better navigate these painful, traumatic events and to communicate your organization's support and commitment to equity and to your employees. Go to deepseaconsulting.com and look in our resources where you can download it for free. We're going to start with this. Let's just, and you know, here in you spend all day, every day, day after day, week after week, studying generations. And I'm asking you in just a few minutes to give us a sense of Generation Z in particular. And the way I'd like to approach it is misperceptions. What do you think are the most significant misperceptions of Generation Z? So the kind that, I mean, I know one, and this isn't even a misperception, but one thing that aggravates me is how often they're just lumped in with millennials and they're just included as millennials. That's not necessarily a misperception, but it's that, you know, not really understanding them as a generation and understanding their perspective. So how do you define them, and particularly in the ways that they are misunderstood or misperceived?
I can jump in.
Yeah, I was going to say, Megan, yes, let's hear from you.
Yeah. So Generation Z, as we classify it, is the generation born between 1995 and 2010. And we'll hear a few different other like starting birth years, but predominantly it is going to be the mid-90s to 2010. And we use 95 because this kind of connects to my first, you know, misperception that I think we see a lot. 1995 was critically important because it's the first year that the internet was commercialized and made available to the everyday people. And so that really does create a huge hallmark moment in the sense that Generation Z is the only generation to date, aside from Gen Alpha, who are currently being born. They're the first modern generation to never know a world without the internet. And so even the early days of the internet, some of the very oldest might remember, you know, the internet in the 2000s, but we see a really rapid evolution of the internet and the way that it's interwoven into our lives pretty rapidly after that. So something that we see with it, these young people, mind you, these are, you know, are the very oldest are about 26 turning 27. The very youngest are about 10 turning 11 this year. And so this is our teens, our tweens, our young adults, college students, recent graduates, and really the newer employees or the younger employees within an organization. A really big misperception is that this generation is addicted to their phones, mm-hmm. And that technology, they can't do anything without technology. Mm-hmm. And yes, that is true that they do have high levels of technology use. We have seen that go up with every generation, but 90% of adults in the United States own their own smartphone, mm-hmm. and have access to a smartphone. So it's not just Generation Z, mm-hmm. but you can't fault a generation when they were handed technology that older generations created that said, this is how we go about living our lives in our world. And this is how the world is operated, and then criticize them for relying on the technology that was created. So there's this idea that they can't live their life without, you know, Google Maps or being able to use their smartphone apps to do things. Well, those apps were created so that our lives were easier, mm-hmm. and that we could go about our lives to be more productive and efficient, and to connect better, and to be able to really just operate so many aspects of our lives more efficiently. Certainly doing it the old fashioned way, like there's great benefit to doing that. But I think this misperception of like, well, they don't know how to do things in the old, like we did it way back when. And I said, but are things faster and easier and less stressful for you because of that technology? Then I think that maybe we've evolved, and that's a good thing. So that's one misperception we see, is that they are too over reliant on technology and that it's going to like be the downfall of them. The really interesting thing here is, yes, they do use technology at a very high rate. They also recognize that role. They recognize how technology is playing a role in how their generation is interacting with people, how it might be diminishing their in-person social skills. And they're the first to call it out. So it's mm-hmm. not like they need older generations criticizing them. Mm-hmm. I think there's actually a lot that older generations, if there's a willingness to learn technology from younger generations, can be a really good point for harmony. Of Generation Z is really good at picking up technology, and especially mobile technology, and being able to extend their productivity in new ways. And so that's one misperception, or maybe it's a criticism we see often, but is something that can certainly be can be worked on and worked through mm-hmm. in different organizations.
Mm-hmm. So Corey, as you see, thank you for that, Megan. And you know, and I would agree. I tend to see, and I have two children that are Gen Z, and I'm very conscious of stereotypes in general, and very conscious of the stereotypes that are put on my daughters just because of their generation. I think that definitely is a misperception, because so often it is actually our daughters that are saying, "Wait a second, Mom, Dad, you're on your phones too much. Can you put your phones down while we have dinner?" Sort of a thing. So I think that's spot on. Corey, as you see more of Gen Z entering into the workplace, particularly in the workplace, what do you think are some of the things that we need to know to better understand them as they're entering in the workplace, whether that's a way that they operate or a misperception?
I think the biggest thing that we need to think about as they are coming into and are already in the workplace is that there are some things that they, based on experience, based on the context in which they grew up, that they will be coming in with different ideas about what work looks like, different expectations about how they want to go about their days, different values and views on hierarchies and structures, different ways of communicating, and even different ways of learning. So being trained, particularly for a new role, or even being supervised, there are differences. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times we will do things to other people in ways that we want them done to us. So for instance, mm-hmm. Because I might learn a certain way, I will teach that exact way to others with the assumption that they learn that way. Right. And that's not necessarily the case. And so while we could go through every different detail about all of the differences, which there are plenty of them, it's probably the bigger thing that's more important is to have conversations with your Gen Z employees, asking them, how do they want to be recognized? How do they want to be valued? How do they want to learn and be trained? How mm-hmm. do they, you know, how do they want to structure their workday? Some of them want to work remotely. As a matter of fact, a good number of them want to work remotely if they are in those kinds of industries that can. But there's also some that want a hybrid situation where they can see people. So some of these kind of blanket approaches are tricky too, where you say, okay, well, all of Gen Z wants this, so we're going to do that. Right. It's really a matter of an and not an or. So I would encourage organizations, and particularly direct supervisors, to have conversations and ask those kinds of questions without assuming that there's, you know, that there's some kind of blanket resolve, whether that's historically or, you know, what they've done, or whether that's how they want to be treated themselves, or just how they might have a suggestion from a quick web search that says, oh no, all Gen Zers like to be trained online at home on their own time. Just give them a link to a training portal and have them come in on Monday ready to go. Be careful with those kinds of things. Some people will like that, others will not. And have those kinds of conversations, but also, and probably most importantly, is to listen to the responses that they give and really be open to saying, okay, we're going to change the way we do this, or we're going to be open to the way that we do this, because we want to attract and retain and help our employees be successful.
Yeah, that's so important to point out. And for our listeners that have heard us talk about this before, you know, we talk about that as a cultural generalization. And you might say, well, generations aren't cultures. We do think that generations are cultures, using the definition of shared meaning, shared experiences, shared perspectives. They are a group that shares meaning, experiences, and perspectives. And so from that lens of culture, they are a cultural group. Cultural groups have patterns in the meaning, experience, and perspectives. That doesn't mean that every single one, same as you wouldn't expect what works for what may be a pattern, men versus women, cisgender men, cisgender women, doesn't necessarily mean what works doesn't work for every single man, every single woman. Same true for every difference, including generations. I'm glad that you brought that up. How about this for a quick rapid fire? I don't know if this is possible, but let's just try this out. I'm going to give a couple of different kind of scenarios and see if you can, in just a sentence or two, talk about the difference from the perspective of Gen Z. So as an example, how they see hierarchy. Corey, can you give me a quick sentence? How do they see hierarchy differently in an organization?
Well, they actually see it very similarly to older generations. They respect the hierarchy. It's the millennials that are sort of trapped in the middle that see much more of a flat organizational structure, not so much Gen Z. The only difference is really is that while a traditional hierarchy might mean that people at the top of the chain keep information kind of close at hand and not share that, Gen Z says, I like the hierarchy, but I want you to be very transparent and very open and very willing to listen to my ideas, even sort of at the bottom of this hierarchy. But I respect the fact that it exists.
That's fabulous. How about group versus individual orientation? If you have a sense of what I mean, Megan, do they see themselves more as a member of a group, or do they see themselves more individualistically?
It depends on the environment and the purpose of the gathering. So from a learning perspective, and even from a potential like work perspective, we're seeing that they prefer intrapersonal learning and independent opportunities. And so this comes from not wanting to be let down by other people, but also not wanting to let others down. And so independent work allows them to really focus on, not with like in a stay in your own lane kind of situation, but really focus their energies on their efforts and being recognized for that. However, they are incredibly communal in the sense of they really are socially focused when it comes to social change, community issues, social issues, and they're very driven by relationships. So it's balancing using relationships as motivation, but also providing them an opportunity for intrapersonal learning, development, and opportunities to work. So it's a matter of like, we can't go about our lives without group work. So balancing that preference with the fact that like we all have to be on the same team.
Fabulous. How about, this goes back a little bit to the hierarchy piece, Corey, back to you. Leadership. I expect from my leaders, what's the kind of the definition of a good leader, what I need from leaders?
Well, they need to have someone who is honest and trustworthy and transparent and authentic. So they need to be able to look to their leaders as role models. And that's an important factor, especially because they see their inner circles as the people that are most influential in their lives. And those can be supervisors if they have a close relationship with them. So that's the first thing. The second thing is they appreciate feedback, and they're even open to having critical feedback. They're the kind of generation that says, I don't want to you know, I don't want to walk around with, you know, something on my face and not have anyone tell me to wipe it off. Tell me to wipe it off because I want to do better. I want to improve. And, you know, if catch me at the very beginning too, don't let me walk around all day with it. And say something now. And that's a really important differentiation also from previous generations who may have liked to receive feedback differently.
Yeah. Yeah. And a bit related to that same, and again, just kind of continuing the rapid fire here, decision-making in an organization. What's the expectation, Megan, from a Gen Z of their role in decision-making in an organization?
They'd like to be able to provide voice. And provide an opportunity to provide feedback. I think they, as Corey pointed out, they recognize the importance of a hierarchy in certain situations, but the ability to have a voice and have a say in how things could be a decision that could be made within an organization really does matter. And it also buys credibility with this group. The other thing is it depends on the decision, but Generation Z is a relatively innovative generation. And so if it's a decision about how do we improve things, they might actually want to be involved in thinking about solutions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the pieces that, and I think most folks have the perception of older generations, we hire them, they're going to stay. They'll stay, they want a career, particularly boomers, they want to stay with an organization for a lifetime. And the perception is that younger generations, that's not as important. So A, is that a reality that you find in your research, or is that a misperception? Corey, what do you find?
Actually, that is a misperception for the most part.
I wondered. I kind of thought it might be.
Yeah, if we've asked career questions on a number of our studies and found really consistently the same thing, which is I will stay in a job, in a role at a particular level for many, many years if I really enjoy what I'm doing, feel like it taps into my passions, and I know that I'm making a difference, especially if two things align. One is the actual job duties and that feeling kind of valued, empowered, and you're making a difference to your job. And that job is situated within an organization that's transparent, ethical, and certainly supports the two things that they care about most kind of globally or socially, which is environmental, being environmentally friendly or concern for the environment, and also social justice and inclusion. But they will stay put if they find a good place to be.
I love that you're blowing that misperception, that stereotype. That was a sense that I had. And so I'm so glad that we're addressing that. So in another piece of really what you're saying, those things that they need, if we are seeing turnover from Gen Zs, we've got a good sense, likely, would you say, can we make that connection? If we're seeing turnover from Gen Zs, it could be that those things that you just mentioned, we're not doing what we need to in kind of that list that you just gave. Is that fair to assume?
Absolutely. The only other caveat, though, is that this is a generation that doesn't necessarily need to be rich, but they do need to have financial stability. So if they're at a point where that the income, the benefits, those things actually are not livable for them, then they will feel like, in some sense, they're forced to leave. So there may be some external factors there, too.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Last question to close us off. You've got that folks that listen to this podcast, we've got diversity, equity, and inclusion practitioners, HR practitioners, folks that have organizational development roles. What piece do you think for them in that organizational role, what do they need to successfully reach Gen Z and to successfully engage them in the organization? Megan, do you have some thoughts about that?
Yeah, as we mentioned before, voice really does matter. So this idea of voice and being able to provide feedback and taking that not from a place of like criticism as a form of like, Gen Z actually wants things to just be improved. And not like a stick it to the hierarchy or the power or the man, whatever you want to call it, kind of situation. Mm-hmm. It's really they want to see things be better. And so from a DE&I perspective, like they want things to be more inclusive and they want to celebrate diversity more. So the feedback that they're providing is oftentimes intended to make things better for themselves and or they're advocating for other people, which I really do value in this generation. The other thing is authenticity. They can sniff out some BS from a mile away, especially when it comes to inclusion standpoints, and they're very well versed in this. And so for them, and like we see this left and right, like as we're recording, it's currently Pride Month. They're the first people to point out that like it is the time to shine for corporations to put up a rainbow flag on their logo and say we support Pride, and then go back 11 months throughout the year and not really have necessarily inclusive practices that would be welcoming to the LGBT community. Mm-hmm. So Gen Z is like, that's not alignment, and they'll be the first to say that. And so for the people that are practicing and really leading initiatives around D&I, like within your organization, doing that with authenticity and allowing open opportunities for feedback is going to be huge. But like doing something is what matters to Generation Z. Making a commitment and also opening up those avenues for feedback and voice is going to be huge, because they would rather see some project and a willingness to hear feedback is more important to Generation Z than getting it right all the time or pretending you're getting it right all the time.
Pretending you're getting it right, which goes back again to that authenticity and that transparency. Yes. Tell me that you're doing it wrong, and how you're doing it wrong is actually going to be more appreciated.
This generation's like they're very okay. As much as they're scared of failure, they're very okay with people being human. Like they want people to just be human and own up to where we make mistakes and like show that commitment to growth. And like, I'm like, we have so much to learn from young people in the sense of humility, and giving people grace and growth. Especially in areas of DE&I and where Generation Z is like, hey, I'm still learning too. And it's okay. I appreciate you saying like, maybe I said something that wasn't inclusive or this practice was exclusionary. We're going to fix it. We hear you and we're going to fix it. And committing to that, it like speaks volumes more than saying we deny that racism exists within our organization. Like they don't want to hear that. They want to hear you own up to it.
Right. And you know what? What we want to do is dig into that more in our next episode. So we will come back and we will dig in much more deeply into this topic of specifically as we are doing diversity, equity, and inclusion work, how are Gen Z members in our workforce going to approach that differently? What are they going to expect from leaders differently? Where might there be rubs? And from my perspective, rubs that we attribute to something else when in reality, the real disconnect is coming from that generation. So tune in for that, folks. In the meantime, I want to once again mention your book, Generation Z, A Century in the Making, and encourage our listeners to come back. We will hear more from Dr. Corey C. Miller and Dr. Megan Grace on this very topic. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you again for your time today. If you want to join the conversation or learn more, go to deepseaconsulting.com. That is deepseaconsulting.com. And please give us a rating and review on your listening platform of choice. Have a great week.